I'm so thrilled to once again be back at the Shakespeare Theatre Association Conference, even especially here on the northeasternmost tip of the North American continent in St. John's, Newfoundland. And I'm finally getting to talk to Mary Hartman, the Director of Education at Bard on the Beach on the complete opposite side of the continent in Vancouver. I was excited to talk to you because my sense about the Shakespeare Theatre Association is that one of the most valuable things we do is its educational component. Am I right about that?
The education folks at STA are, we are very committed, we are very playful, we are very connected to one another,
yeah.
And we care about this stuff really deeply.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. I'm Austin Titchener, co-artistic director of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, now in its 20th year, number 997, Plays Not Works. I'd been wanting to chat with Mary Hartman, the Director of Education at Bard on the Beach Shakespeare Festival in Vancouver, BC, Canada, for an entire year, and we finally got to have our conversation last Thursday night in the hotel bar at the annual conference of the Shakespeare Theatre Association in St. John's, Newfoundland. But on Friday night, we were rocked by the sad news that Tina Packer, the founding artistic director of Shakespeare and Company in Lenox, Massachusetts, and an acclaimed director, actor, writer, and teacher, died at the age of 87. Tina was a mentor to generations of artists, scholars, and educators, including Mary. And so this conversation, recorded the night before we learned that Tina had left us, is now an unintentionally timely celebration of Tina Packer's legacy.
There's a thing that my dear friends and mentors at Shakespeare and Company in Western Massachusetts, that's where I started my career.
Okay.
What they used to say, and it's going to sound kind of silly at the beginning, but I'm leading to a point. Shakespeare wrote plays. He was a playwright.
Right.
And these plays were performed by players
buildings
called Playhouses.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until later that everybody started calling that great, big, heavy, serious book that's on everyone's shelves the complete
works
of William Shakespeare.
Yeah.
So going from plays to works changes everything.
And that's, I've just discovered this recently, or realized it recently, that started with the folio.
But not on the title page.
Right.
It was sort of in one of the little early, you know, introductory bits.
That was sort of ground zero of putting Shakespeare up on a pedestal from which we are constantly trying to bring him down.
Yeah. But, you know, that's what we're doing more than anything, is inviting people to play again.
Yeah.
We play Shakespeare, and when we play Shakespeare, I'm going to back up. Working on Shakespeare makes it harder than it actually is.
Yes.
Working on Shakespeare takes all the fun out of it, and working on Shakespeare misses the point.
Interesting, yeah. It's so great. Even though we're sitting down here in this bar drinking single malt scotch, you just climbed up onto a soapbox there, and it was fantastic to watch.
And it was all I could do not to jump up onto the chair, Austin. I don't know if you can see my arms and legs are swinging, but yeah, I get excited about this stuff.
Another reason why I wish this were a video podcast. this is the thing I've started saying the last couple of years, is that I wish people would stop saying Shakespeare is for everyone.
Oh, I agree.
Really?
I do.
You do?
I do. I want to open the door to absolutely anyone who wants to come through the door. But I'm not going to push people in.
Anyone is the is the pronoun I use.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Because Shakespeare is for everyone begins to sound more and more like a threat and less like a promise.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
That is such an important distinction.
Yeah.
And I confess, there are two other words that I really have a hard time with.
Uh-huh.
One is universal.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so one is universal.
Yeah.
The other one is themes.
Themes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Stop talking about Shakespeare in literary terms.
Well, yeah. And yeah. and for me, universal I immediately start to like get uncomfortable about that word because I want to say, how do you know it's universal? And who's deciding
right.
what is universal? What applies to everyone?
But also, surely the reason, I believe I talked about this with a young Peter Holland, you know, of Shakespeare renown, is that the reason Shakespeare has survived for so long is not because he's the same to everyone. It's because he's different to everyone. And everyone interprets him and appreciates him differently and with great specificity. So it's not universal. You know, it's there if you want it and you can bring yourself to it and you can bring him to you, I think.
And I think Emma Smith talks about, I think she calls it the sheer permissive gappiness of Shakespeare.
Yeah,
but
cool.
It's this idea that it's just so stretchy, so open to interpretation. There is room there for anyone who, again, feels like coming through the door. It's that idea of there's just room there.
Yeah.
It's open and it's stretchy and you can look at it from so many different angles.
Yeah.
And once you're inside it, you can stretch it in so many different ways that, again, once that door is open, for anybody who feels like going in there,
yeah.
they can muck about and see it in their own way.
Yeah.
And not everything has that sheer permissive gappiness in Emma Smith's words.
That malleability.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's all good. So now tell me why you don't like the word theme. It's just because it's literary. It's how we study it in English class and he's meant to be played?
I think so. I think it's my understanding of my discomfort with this word isn't quite as clear as it is for universal.
Uh-huh.
But for me, I get the way, like, a musical theme
sure.
might that be a metaphor for something that
a light
we might,
motif or yeah, something. Yeah,
that
yeah,
we
yeah.
might recognize in Shakespeare. But the reason I think I'm just uncomfortable with it is it feels to me like when I hear people talk about a theme,
yeah.
it's like, let me tell you what to think about when you experience this play.
Right, right.
And that's why I don't like it.
It's imposed from above rather than a discovery made from the text as you work on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
I stumbled upon this idea when talking with another artist last month that I think instead of theme, I like the idea of threads.
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 Yeah.
That we can follow different threads
yeah.
through a play or another experience. And, you know, they're just kind of a curious way to think about, you know, to follow a path through
yeah.
a play. And they're different kinds of threads. Like, you know, even like in a garment, some threads are structural.
Yeah, right.
right? They're going to hold the whole thing together.
Right.
Some are decorative.
Yeah.
But no less interesting.
Well, I love what you're saying about all of this, and this ties back to this the thing you said earlier about Shakespeare being a former player who wrote plays to be played in playhouses, is that one of the things I don't want to hear anymore is this notion that everything that you need as an actor or as a director is in Shakespeare's words, which is a goddamn lie. And that honors Shakespeare, that may honor Shakespeare the poet. It doesn't honor Shakespeare the dramatic poet, nor does it honor what an actor brings to a role, which Shakespeare knew. Shakespeare knew which actors he was writing for and knew the mouths of the actors he was writing words to put in those mouths. So an actor needs to bring emotion, subtext, given circumstances, all the basic acting 101 stuff. So this idea that it's all in Shakespeare's words is a lie.
I agree.
Okay.
I agree. And at the Shakespeare Theater Association conference,
yeah.
we just had the most phenomenal 3-day pre-conference practicon, which is my favorite part of the conference because it's, you know, about 40 of us and we're doing stuff.
You're up on your feet.
Yes, we are doing stuff.
It's the stuff I hate because it's way too much like being in school. But yes, I can see the joy it brings everybody. And part of me is just going, oh, get off your ass, Titchener, and just get in there.
Honestly, it was 3 days of the most profound joy and the most soaring delight. But the what made me just think of it right now. Oh, and it was led by Ben Crystal and other artists called a Quick Raise Practicon. Passion and Practice is like part of what they're up to. But what I want to say about it is so much of that time was spent just on connecting with one another. So when you were saying it's a lie, that it's all you need is in the text,
yeah.
I agree 100%. It is a lie.
Yeah.
There is so much in one another.
Yeah, yeah.
And in our relationship with the audience.
Yeah.
And I mean, what is the point? Like, if we're just reciting beautiful language, then sure, it's all in the text. And but that's not what we're up to.
We're not. That's poetry. And Shakespeare performances should not be poetry readings.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
We've got something much more urgent, much more provocative, much more engaging, electrifying, joyful in this pursuit that we do of live theater performance.
Yeah.
We are telling stories that have life and death stakes and that will change our whole thinking about everything and will question, you know, our deepest beliefs and provoke us into, you know, new ideas and all kinds of wonderful things. And it's as much about the people, if not more, than it is about the words. And I am such a word nerd. I love the language. And I still believe that's true.
Hi, I'm David Crystal.
And I'm Ben Crystal.
And we're the authors of Everyday Shakespeare.
Lines for Life.
And you're listening to
the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? In the first half of 2026, we'll be doing three performances of all the great books abridged in Virginia and Michigan, and we'll be bringing back the show that started it all, the complete works of William Shakespeare abridged to more than 30 cities in the UK. And on Monday night, February 2nd, 2026, we'll have a special live recording of the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast on stage at Chicago's famed Annoyance Theater, where I'll be talking to the Annoyance's founder and artistic director, Mick Napier, and his executive director, Jennifer Eslin. The show will start at 7 o'clock, and I'll have more details about it in the coming weeks. Check out the touring page at our website, reducedshakespeare.com, or our social media pages for other venue and ticket information. Now back to my conversation with Mary Hartman, the Director of Education at Bard on the Beach Shakespeare Festival in Vancouver, BC, Canada, talking about the playfulness of Shakespeare's language.
God knows I love language too, but unless it's in the service of character and story and conflict and resolution, then I could be at home reading. You know, I don't need to hear somebody just lecture. What is your, you talked about your, where you started your career in Lennox Mass at Shakespeare and Company. Are you a failed actor who succeeded out of being an actor? I mean, I'm watching you bounce around on this bench here in the bar, and you're very physical. You bring a great physicality to this work and this conversation. Did you start as an actor? I guess we all did, maybe.
Well, yeah. I was going to say, in my youth, I did the school plays and everything like that. But I was incredibly fortunate that my first experience of Shakespeare, when I was 13 years old, was I happened upon an audition notice for A Midsummer Night's Dream with something that was then, in 1979, called the Pennsylvania Shakespeare Festival. It is not affiliated with the current Pennsylvania Shakespeare Festival.
Okay.
It's predated that.
Okay.
But, because I grew up in Pennsylvania. Anyway, it was a company of adults. And
you were how old?
I was 13 years old.
Oh, yeah, perfect.
And I played Moth, and then Cobweb dropped out, and I became Cobweb.
Oh, yeah, that's a big leap. Moth to Cobweb. You kidding?
But I had the time of my life, and that was my introduction to Shakespeare. So anyway, I did...
And that was that one of your first theater experiences? No, that was just your introduction to Shakespeare.
It was one of my first theater experiences.
Well, that's even cooler, really.
So cool.
Yeah, that it started with Shakespeare.
I'm so grateful for that. And so, yes, I did school plays and so forth, and also at college, etc. But what I really was aspiring to be was a director when I was finishing my undergraduate work. But to be the kind of director I wanted to be, I was really interested in what was happening among the actors.
Yeah.
Because that's where I thought the heart of the really exciting stuff in theater was for me. Yeah. It wasn't about, like, the production values and the set, you know, like, where, you know, what the concept is. That wasn't my bag. I was really interested in what was happening among the actors. So I thought, oh, to do that kind of theater, I need to learn more about acting. So I was really fortunate at my college in New Hampshire. Shakespeare and Company artists came as visiting faculty.
Which college?
Dartmouth College.
Oh, sure.
And so I met them, and I was just, again, I was so inspired. And so I managed to get Dartmouth College to give me a graduate fellowship to cover the cost of my training at Shakespeare and Company.
Smooth operator.
Exactly. And so anyway, I went to work at Shakespeare and Company and kept saying, oh, I'm not an actor. I'm not an actor, because I was focusing on directing.
Sure.
But I ended up being cast as an understudy for a wonderful actress who had a serious health concern. And so I ended up doing a fair number of her performances.
Okay.
And so I kind of accidentally became an actor.
You know, that's the best way to become an actor, really, is accidentally. Yeah. What I love about that story is that it honors the original practice that Shakespeare had. Shakespeare was writing his words specifically so actors could say them. He wasn't writing them to be printed, to then be read and examined as what we would now call literature, or a holy book, as they might have called it back then. It was words for actors to say live on stage with each other. That is the original intent of Shakespeare, and to treat it any other way is fine, but not what we do.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Acted with Shakespeare and Company. I directed for Shakespeare and Company, but the thing that I really started to do at Shakespeare and Company that absolutely changed my life is I started working in the education program with Kevin Coleman.
Okay.
And just the most rewarding, the most engaging, the most phenomenal work. Just getting in there, and mostly it was kids there.
Sure.
And Kevin used to say, we give them Shakespeare and get out of their way.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Comedy Podcast, except for one more thing, which I'll share with you in about 60 seconds, so stick around. The only bright spot in learning about Tina Packer's death was that so many of her colleagues and friends heard the news together when we were gathered in the hotel bar at the Shakespeare Theater Association conference. I think Tina would have liked that. If you're an actor, teacher, or student and want to find out more, Mary Hartman's Bard on the Beach Education Department has some extraordinary resources, including PDFs and curriculum planners at bardonthebeach.org. Send us your favorite mentor via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com, or throw a comment to us over on the socials, or on our own actual website, reducedshakespeare.com, or visit my website, theshakespeareans.com. Thanks, as always, to lifelong learner Matthew Croak, web services by Ginger Power Limited, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Allison Lynn Ragland. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Ben and David Crystal, the authors of Everyday Shakespeare Lines for Life. Ben also gave the keynote address at last week's Shakespeare Theater Association conference. And as always, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 997 2991st of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. Mary Hartman, Mary Hartman, I'm sorry.
You know what's really sad?
Yeah.
How few people get that reference anymore. Oh, Austin, we are old.
We are so old.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.
So much less. So much less.